fans of Hawk Talk Basketball, we are back with another great episode. I am your host, Tony, and of course, I'm joined by our other host, Mr. Peter. Peter, how are we feeling after what is a very tough Dayton loss?
Tony, I'm feeling pretty down right now. I think this game was one that when the going was good, the going was great, and when it went sideways, everything seemed to collapse badly. So, yeah, I think there's a lot to get into today.
Absolutely. And for those who live under a rock, St. Joseph's University lost to Dayton 79-94 in what was a game of two halves. That is a fact. First half, oh my gosh, we were blowing the doors off. Of course, with the dreaded three-point shot, but there were some other plays that were not three-point oriented. I just think of one great give-and-go. I think it was between Cam Brown and Kreese, where Kreese sets the pick real high in the zone, and then just, you know, Cam runs to the net, and they throw him the ball, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful layup, quick and easy. When you have a big man who can facilitate, it is truly beautiful basketball. Reminds you of, like, a modified Princeton. But as I said, tail two halves, Hawks came out absolutely flat. There was a seven-minute span in the second half where we didn't score at all, pretty much. Win totally taken out of our sails. And so on today's episode, we're going to be talking all about that. We're going to break down the game. We're going to talk about some of the key points, which I haven't even mentioned, like the Anthony Finkley ejection. We're going to talk about the way the Dayton fans acted, which will, you know, we do it for the clicks, people. That is a click driver conversation. And we opened up the mailbag and a lot of you reached out. So without further ado, let's start with Pete. What were you thinking in the beginning of the game, right? That first half. For the fans out here, I think I prefaced it on the last show. I was at a Dayton bar, actually, watching the game in Chicago. They actually have a huge following in Chicago because Midwest town, you recruit from a lot of those schools. And didn't pick any fights, luckily. But let me tell you, that first half, when St. Joe's just banging on all cylinders, and there was a couple DePaul guys in the bar. There were a couple other, like, Big East schools. Marquette guys are in the bar. They're like, wow, this St. Joe's team's really good. Some of them had never even heard of St. Joe's, which was quite frustrating. This isn't a high school. But all of this to say, Pete, first half, for me, it was great. I was on cloud nine. I got to, you know, show off a school that no one really knew about in a place that not a lot of people go to, that school. But for you, you're probably sitting at home. How are you feeling? Were you screaming at the television?
So I couldn't have been happier in certain ways. Like, I just thought Cam Brown was having the game that I thought he deserved. He was doing really good things, getting great shots. Everything for Cam seemed in rhythm. I thought Kreese was playing. Kreese and Rashier were staying out of foul trouble. They were doing a really good job containing DeRon, which my key to the game was keep DeRon to under 20 and 10, and we win. And we did that in the first half. Like, we were on track to that with DeRon with 6 points. There was doubt, sort of didn't creep into my mind necessarily, but I did. There was a palpable sense of, like, Eric was forcing the issue. I felt that as soon as Eric started to try to find his shot, it just wasn't there. And it wasn't coming at the right time that we're used to. I guess maybe the fact is that Eric takes those shots all the time. And when they go in, it feels good. But this is the first time in a long time that they just didn't go in. And so the shots that he took seemed that much worse. So the first half, I felt great. I mean, how do you feel bad going into the half up 38-34 against the 18th ranked team in the nation when people thought that this wouldn't be necessarily a close game?
Right.
I thought that was great.
And the fans did their job. Shout out to the fans. They came to the game.
You know, I'll give credits to Billy and to the staff to an extent, just for the first half, just for the first 20 minutes. I think we found out how you beat Dayton. And I mean, it doesn't really matter if you don't put it together for a full 40 because things collapse in the second half. But the fact that we could stop DeRon was was a great thing, right? If the game ended at 20 minutes, it would have been great.
Yeah, and our big men played really well. I was at that bar, and they were like, who are these two guys? Why is your center bigger than ours? Kreist is bigger than Daron Holmes. He is.
He's yeah. And it, not necessarily a terrible game for him. Only one turnover, three attempts. I mean, you can't. He didn't do terrible. I mean, maybe you would like to see him get going a little bit more in the interior, but there wasn't too much drawn up for him. I felt like a lot of what we were going for was just threes. About 37 attempts, right?
And playing fast. Clearly, you can tell playing fast was like our methodology, which it worked if you attacked the rim, right?
Yeah. And you saw that right away in the first half. I think Lynn Greer, that first possession, like that quick turnover that we had, we were like, okay, we're just going to be playing with like, I don't know, as fast as we possibly can, because that's how we, in our mind, would beat Dayton. And it worked well until Dayton started playing slow. Control pace. It's much easier to win when you can control pace at a slow pace than going as fast as you possibly can. Because guys just run out of gas eventually. And Dayton was playing really late into the shot clock. I guess we can start talking about the second half, unless you want to add any more, Tony. But
no, but I think one thing to transition to is we're throwing up. We go into the second half, and I mentioned it already. We didn't mention the Anthony Finkley elbow.
Yeah, got to mention that. Yeah,
what a warrior! What a warrior move! Freshman throws his elbow right into him. Now, I understand the play he was making. It's not the end of the world. It's just frustrating where it's like, we need you, right? So we can also afford for you to be the enforcer. I think every team needs an enforcer. It's just brutal when it's like they catch you on a flagrant two. It's not a flagrant one. You're not playing hard basketball. Oh, oops, you know, I stepped over the bounds and I forced an issue that didn't need to be forced. Like, he just straight up elbowed this guy out of nowhere. They're going to eject you from the game. So he's a freshman learning moment. And it was one where it was clearly not out of, like, malice, I would say. Because he's trying to set a pick. He's trying to maybe pick up a defender or box out. But it just, the way it unfolded, it's like, yeah, they're going to kick you out of the game, bud. So, it was unfortunate. I think we would have needed him. But, you know, we had to ride with who we did. And we showed that we didn't need him fully to play with Dayton. I think the only reason why you would need him is, clearly the guys started either getting tired or I don't even know what the combination was. It was like, do these guys care? Like, you just saw how to beat this team. You show up and then, like, this is what you do. And the most frustrating part for me in the second half was 2 minutes to go. They actually start, like, closing the gap. It's like, guys, where was this with, like, 12 minutes to go? Like, they're going back to, like, intercepting the passing lanes, trapping the ball handler. You know, we have better guards. Like, trap their guards in the half court. Like, why aren't we doing that stuff? Why aren't we exposing them defensively from our guard positioning? And the other one was, you know, Lynn Greer starts shooting these, like, really close fadeaways. It's like, this is how you do it, guys. There's a couple plays where Lynn Greer goes underneath the basket freely, same with X, and, you know, they pass it around, okay, but then they end up shooting a three. It's like, guys, we just watched you go under the basket. You telling me we can't send a guy cutting? Or we're in that 1-3, they're in the 1-3-1, and we have no one running the baseline? Like, Fleming had a couple of those plays where it got close to, like, a dunk because he comes in and cuts. But, man, Fleming should be just constantly running the baseline if we see that zone. And it was there were opportunities to score closer, and we just kept shooting threes because it did work in the first half. But you get the lead, but how do you maintain it? They caught up to us with threes. Santos was just on fire. But they also made a lot of twos, right? So, you know, if we had just maintained some type of scoring, easier said than done, but it is just frustrating knowing it's like, oh, with 2 minutes to go, we're going to play really good guard defense, and then Lynn Greer is actually going to score a couple really nice, you know, 8-10 footers where it's like he could get that every game if he really wanted to, and Reynolds just didn't want to do anything near the basket, you know, so.
I'll add one more point to the Finkley conversation. You know, going back to our game against Villanova. Villanova was coming off of a game against UNC in Memphis where Eric Dixon scored 34 points against UNC against Bamisil. And then at Memphis, he had 11. And Finkley really did well against him defensively. He has the ability to change games defensively. And lastly, I also just adds another person on the offensive end that doesn't clog up things too much. I thought if we could get another 5 minutes out of him, I think those 5 minutes, and that was a 5-point swing too, because when that happened, they scored, right? And it was an and one, I believe. And then we got called for the flagrant two, so they got the ball back. Or maybe they scored before or after the flagrant two. Either way, it was a 5-point swing in Dayton's favor. Just like a rookie mistake, a bonehead mistake. We can't have that happen. There's big games. You can't do that, right? So that's what I wanted to say about Finkley. First half, otherwise, I would have personally. I feel like the rotations. This is first half and second half. I think, and you know, feel free. I'm sure if some people are going to disagree with this, but you got to figure out if Eric's shooting the way he shot from the field, you got to get him out sooner, and you got to figure out who's going to be the guy, because you have guys who can be the scorer and who can set up the offense. Eric just wasn't performing, right? I mean, I don't know what we were expecting. We sort of, like you're saying, we could have gotten so much more done on the interior, but we just settled. We were like, okay, we'll just do this again. Eric went out for a 3-minute stretch in the second, came back in, and I don't know, nothing changed. So it feels like there wasn't that piece of accountability that I would have liked to seen from the rotation end of things.
Yeah, and it's not like pulling Eric is like a shock if you put X in.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going to put this other guy who's really good in. Like, we just got to change it up. Even, you know, you're not going to be out for the entire game, but it's not working, and we're, you know, what was this lead is now down to nothing, and we're about to lose, like, total control of this game. And, you know, and then by then, Hagen's like a library at that point. We're feeding off the energy of the team, and then it just goes quiet. You know, everyone in the building who has been traumatized by the last 4 or 5 years of this program, all the people who go to games regularly, probably sitting there just going, uh-oh, I've seen this show before, and the energy level just drops in the building. You can see it on TV.
I don't know how you teach this into programs. You probably have to start winning games, but we had Tony, I mean, on our account, we had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people message us about the way that the fans were acting at the game in different capacities. But the five I'm mentioning were messaging us because the fans were great when we were up 15-5. What happens when things go sideways? I don't know. I actually thought of this, Tony. We make fun of Villanova a lot for having the wine and cheese club over there. I think we're starting to have at St. Joe's. We also have the beer and pretzel crowd, where it's just like people are just like going to the games and they sit down, they expect to have a good game, and they don't realize that like St. Joe's might not play a team like this again for like another 2 years. Like Dayton's ranked 18th in the nation, and they have someone who's going to be a first round draft pick next year, likely.
I think it's the sad sack crowd. I don't even think it's beer and pretzels. I think we just become sad sacks. I've been in, you know, I was a season ticket holder not too long ago, and there were regulars where it's like you sit in there and it's like the minute something starts to go wrong, it's the end of the world. They're booing and they get that Philly fan attitude, but it's just like their belief that we can come back is just totally shot. Like, I see these guys, like, they flip on the team in a heartbeat as soon as it starts to not work out well.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a negative feedback loop that we got to get over. Like, we talk about being a high major program. Our fans right now, they're stuck in mid-major, mid-major land. Like, if you want to be an elite program, look at teams, forget Villanova. Like, I feel like our fan experience is some way trying to blend itself with Villanova, which I hate. Forget Villanova. Look to other colleges throughout the nation. Look to Providence College. Look to fans that actually have a great fan experience. I'm just gonna dive into it, Tony. Think of it this way. Everyone on campus knows that the lacrosse team has great family events before and after the games, right? The tents, right, set up right along Sweeney Field, right? Mm-hmm. How is there not something consistent with that for our basketball team, which is we're not a football school. How do we not have a tailgate that's safe for students to be at and to enjoy themselves, and especially during huge games? Like, we're too preoccupied with like making the game the Eagles night that we lose sight of what's really important, of bringing people together and the value that the university, the responsibility the university has to make going to the games fun and safe and enjoyable.
Yeah, I don't know what, like, these are like three different issues all into one, I guess. But like, yeah, I agree. Where it's like, I was sitting at the bar and the guy's like, "Why is everyone in Eagles shirts?" They're asking that. Like, these are Dayton fans I'm sitting with. They're like, "Why is everyone?" They had no idea, right? They don't watch. They don't follow the account. They have no idea it's Eagles night. You know, and they're like, "Why is everyone wearing Eagles gear? It makes it look like no one is a fan of the team. They just wore something that was like, hey, this is a bird. I'm going to wear this to the game." And I think the other issue is, no, I don't think you're wrong. How do you do it? Like, let's just be frank. St. Joe's campus is like in a small little area. There's not a lot of room to do anything like that. You know, you're fenced in by three busy roads. We don't really get to do like, have that much control over the area. I'm not saying that's an excuse. I'm just saying, like, that's the challenge that we have to face. Like, how do we do this? What do we do about it? Do we put them on the field? Do we have something on the turf? I'm sure the school would hate doing that. They'd rather just preserve that turf. But I'm just, like, trying to think, where would you do this, you know? Unfortunately, like, I wish we built the stadium on the Marion side of campus. Because that's, you have all those fields over there and you could utilize them. But of course, they were never going to let that happen. So I don't disagree. It's something that we need to work on. But speaking of students, I mean, speaking of fans, I'm not going to dunk on our St. Joe's fans too much. We can be Debbie Downers sometimes. And that's like, it's so funny. Like, whenever I watch them, the games with friends, it's like 12 minutes, like the LaSalle game. When there's 12 minutes to go and we're down by 8, calm down. It's okay. We're in control. Cooler heads prevail when you're in trouble like that. When it's 2 minutes to go, that's a different story. But these Dayton fans going after the St. Joe's fans, bad. Bad. I mean, these total troll accounts, I don't even know who these people are. They just hide behind names. But some of our most beloved talking heads on Twitter for St. Joe's basketball getting berated by people who are just downright despicable, in my opinion. And the best part of it all is I've got Dayton fans who are Dayton people who write about Dayton basketball, who are bloggers about Dayton basketball, talking about how, oh, this is a big boy sport. You don't, you know, we can dunk on you and go up by 30. Like, don't boo us for that. They literally got angry, and I quote tweeted it. The one guy was Chris Pyle, who I work with at A10 Talk. I like the guy, but he was like, actually, let me pull up the direct quote. And I quote tweeted it too. It goes, LMAO, Elvis with a petty three-pointer, and people booed. Grow up. They make more money than us now. Running up the score doesn't matter in big boy sports. I don't know if they make more money than me, first of all. Second of all, I then said, when Midwest meets the Northeast. Oh, it's a big boy sport? Grow up? What are you talking about? Well, it's a big boy sport. Yeah, we're going to boo you. We're going to boo the crap out of you. Next time we play you, we're going to boo you even harder. And I'm not going to admit, and Pete, this is where I become like a psycho. This is like where that inner runner in me comes out. I never admitted that someone was better than me. I still don't do it with anything that I do. I can't. I will not. I will not admit the other team is better than me. We can beat them. And you have to have that psycho attitude if you're going to beat a team that, in theory, is better than you. We can beat these guys. Let's beat up on this fan base. Let's not take their crap. Ignore them. They're from, as you said, tweeted out, they're from Ohio. You know, that's just all they have to look forward to. No, we are killers. We are going to win games if we can. And we got to have that chip on our shoulder. That is required. That is what champions have. Michael Jordan didn't take no for an answer. He didn't take losing for example. That's an extreme example. But it's one that is something that we should all keep in mind when we're talking about our team. Don't back down. It's so funny. We like argue. It's like it's your family. You and your brother would argue. But as soon as someone says something about your brother, no, that's my family. And that's how I think, you know, this Dayton experience should be a wake-up for our fans. We like to bicker at one another. No, rally the troops. Form the barricade. Circle the wagons. We just ran into a nasty fan base. Don't back down. Absolutely do not back down. And we need our guys to be ready to play, and we need to support them, and that's what we need. Yeah, did that cheer you up, Pete?
Yeah, it did. It did. It got me going. You know, those guys who are sitting in the student section, I love to see it. That means that something in their head was, you know, they got to them, right? There's a reason why they were making hand motions and saying irate things. Like, there's a reason for it, because we got to them. And, you know, we're going to keep going.
They're saying slurs to our fans because we're doing that good of a job of bothering them. And then they tell us to grow up. No, we're not growing up. Have you ever been to Philadelphia? No. Go back to Ohio.
Yeah, they can enjoy their... I don't even know. That's about all they have.
Like, go eat your Skyline chili. I don't know what they do in Dayton, Ohio. Disgusting. Your disgusting Skyline chili. Oh, well, Dayton's not near Cincinnati.
You know, the funny thing is, Tony, a lot of people from Dayton are definitely tuning into this podcast, because that's literally how
yo, they're going to see this. St. Joe's reacts to Dayton, and they're going to be like, oh, these guys are going to be sulking. And you know, and it's so funny, because we've had great experience with Dayton fans. Let me preface with that, too.
Yeah.
As I said, I went to a Dayton bar, had a great experience. No one bothered me. Not a problem. But boy, it's more of just like those online accounts, man. It was just crazy. So, you know, it's just like everything in life these days. There's going to be those bad apples, and we're not going to let... I think the whole point of that rant is we're not going to let them bother us. They just live... They live not rent-free.
Yeah, the anonymity of it all.
Yeah, I was going to say, they don't live rent-free in my head, but they may have some rent control. They have, like, rent-floored prices.
Should we hit the mailbag?
Hit the mailbag. You want to read them out? I have one that's not on our Twitter account that I did promise I would read, but let's go to the Twitter account once first.
Yeah, I'll do my best. Some of these are very long-winded, but we're hitting them up. So Nickelbag, D. Johnson Swag asked us, he has some questions for the pod. He says, has Reynolds indicated he will be back next year? And then he has a two-part question, but we can hit the first one. I don't know, Tony, do you know? I mean...
I haven't heard anything. That's something for Gifford to answer. We'll have him on the show. We were thinking about getting Matt to come on. And speaking of Matt, I just want to give him a shout out. Something you had said earlier in the pod, Pete, and I just got to say it really quickly. You know, you were saying, like, we figured out in the first 20 minutes how to beat Dayton. What did Matt say on, like, a couple podcasts ago? Our season in the A-10 play is just, like, stay 500 and learn how to beat other teams. So, like, let's keep that in mind, because that kind of relates to what Matt had been saying at an earlier episode. But from an Eric Reynolds standpoint, no, I haven't heard anything. We won't know until the end of the season. Okay, and then there's a second part to that question, right, Pete?
Yeah, so the second part is, if he's gone, do all of Billy's recruits leave with him too? So, Tony, I'll let you touch on this one. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't think where would he be leaving? It's one thing if you take a guy, like, let's use Mason as an example, right? With Kim English, right? He goes to Providence. That's a move up. You take your best player with you because you're going to the Big East. But if Billy leaves, it's like, if he gets a job, name a school, Rider University, you think Eric's going there and following him? You know, the guys may go to other schools, but I don't think they're going to follow him per se. If anything, they'll just look after themselves going, kind of like when Phil left, where it's like, oh, I know what my worth is. I'm going to go play for another. I'm going to go to Louisville, you know? So that's, in my opinion, what would happen. And the only time those guys follow each other is when they're moving up to a school. You know, you're going to get a starting position at a, you know, my old coach is there. We're at, you know, say, as I said, like, use Providence example. We're going from Mason to Providence, and I'm going to get a starting spot in the rotation. Like, that's a win-win. So I'm going to follow my old coach.
Yeah, I don't see him leaving this year. Yeah. It's a down-the-line question anyway.
Yeah.
So next question comes from Brent Konecki, it's a run-on question, but he just wanted to see what we had to say about the smack talk at the end of the game and the student section, if we had any insights into like what we thought just in general about the game. This is a very run-on question.
I was just going to say, I think if I was going to wrap it all up in a bow, it's just that sports, right? You guys beat us, okay? You know, we don't like when you beat us. We're going to boo you. To ask us to be like, oh, to grow up and not boo the other team, what are you talking about? Like, you guys are dunking all over us. You want, you know, it sounded like, I'm sure someone would argue otherwise, but to me, I'm just giving you my opinion. The way it felt like was we weren't allowed to boo you because we lost. Only the team that won is allowed to, like, gloat, right? Like, no, that's not how sports work, right? Any of the great rivalries. We never admit defeat. We don't like when the other team beats us. I'm not saying Dayton-St. Joe's is a rivalry, but, you know, Dayton fans, take a look at Villanova. We boo them even if we were losing by 30, so.
Tony, there's a mailbag question coming in live right now.
Breaking news. What does it say?
So it's coming in from Hawk Enthusiast.
Oh my gosh, he's come out of the woodwork. He was liking our tweets. I was like, where have you been? He's left the nest.
I know, I'm glad he's coming back home, you know. All right, so Hawk Enthusiast says, why can Billy not figure out how to come out of halftime and not look absolutely atrocious after 5 years?
I think it's the melatonin they give him. He's giving it to the players.
yeah. I mean, they scored 60 on us. The melatonin's got to stop. I think that's it.
Nailed NyQuil? It. Do they give him NyQuil? Is it something?
Maybe both, honestly.
I don't know if it's just a lack of focus, right? See, that's the thing. We're not in that locker room. We would kill to be in that locker room, though. You know? What happens if we all got in there and it's like, Billy's giving great adjustments. Like, if you were a coach and you were sitting here like, this is a masterclass of adjustments, and the guys come out and they just don't listen to them, right? They just start chucking threes, right? Because, you know, Billy can tell them what to do, but sometimes, and you've seen it in games, they just do what they want to do.
Yeah, Billy's not there out there chucking, so I don't know.
Right. I think it's just, I'm not saying he is making those moves. I'm just saying we are in the locker room, so we have no idea, but it is a question where it's like, and that's the thing, like, you know, I was actually pinging Riley Frayne about this after the game. It's like, here's a tough question we could ask Billy, but, you know, no one's going to ask it, and no one's going, and he would never answer it. And, like, this is one of them. We're never going to get the answer, and that's going to be always a ding on him, though. It's to his detriment, because if he doesn't give us an answer, or we don't get any insight into what's actually going on in halftime, and we're seeing the same result over and over again, and he doesn't provide an answer, well, we're just going to assume that he doesn't know what he's doing, and that's on him.
Absolutely. So a few more questions from Hawk Enthusiast. He asked, I'll just list them off real quick. Who runs the marketing team? Why can't they not sell out tickets to a top 20 matchup? Why are students not given incentives to come to games? Why can't we fork over the money for T-shirts at least at half of the A-10 games? And who's in charge, and why are they so bad at a fairly easy job? He also gives a side note, but I'll read that at the end. So do you want to touch on that, Tony? I feel like I already gave my spiel on this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know who runs the program, but I think just saying all those questions in a why format, if you sat someone down from the school and said, okay, now we're going to answer 10, we're going to ask you 10 poignant questions. And, like, great example, why don't we have T-shirts out for the game, for a special game like Dayton? Why don't we have a red out or a white out? Budget. What do you mean budget? What budget? You telling me we don't have a donor who owns a T-shirt shop who would be willing to print the T-shirts, put his name on it? There's creative ways. I don't know. It's always easier to do that. But, you know, I'm like, it's the way I look at it, Pete. It's like, I'm in sales all day. Every day, all I do is try to find money in people's pockets. It's possible. I do it. If the school really wanted to do it, there'd be a way. And, you know, that's that person's job. You have to have uncomfortable asks. But clearly, I love the methodology of ask all those whys. you start to think about yourself, yeah, why can't we do all that stuff?
Nicely put. All right, he has a side note here, which is actually, I think, kind of the funnest part of this to read. He said, I've always said how cool it would be if Obi's team won the tournament. I take that back. Ooh. It was awesome they never got a shot. Dayton. Dayton are my new most hated team in the league.
Good.
Dash. Hawk enthusiast. Signed, Hawk enthusiast.
Good. I have nothing to add. That was perfect.
Nicely put, Hawk enthusiast. You know, 2020 happened for a reason.
Yeah. They released the whole virus so we could screw Dayton fans. Sounds about right. Pete, I have one. I promised I would read it. This is from Mike from Rhode Island. Our next three games are against teams we already played this season. St. Louis, Loyola Chicago, which I will probably be at because it's in Chicago, and Duquesne. And all three games were decided by three or less points. What are we looking to see in these matchups a second time around? Pete, this one I'm going to let you answer.
So did he ask about the next four or three games?
Three, which is St. Louis, Loyola Chicago, Duquesne. We've played all those teams. We've lost to two of them, beat one of them. All were three-point games. All had their mistakes in them. How do we capitalize? How do we get better? How do we show that we've learned from their last game and prove that we're the better team and we learned our lesson from the first time?
So Loyola Chicago has come into the season proving a lot of doubters wrong. They have ripped off seven or eight wins at this point, and they're sitting at the top of the A-10 standings. We need to beat them. We showed that in a very close matchup that we let go. We were up in that game. We can't let that happen again. We need to beat them. As far as the other two go, I mean, all right, so St. Louis.
No excuse.
No excuse. Yeah, no excuse. Just leave it at that. Gibson Jimerson had a career night against us. He's having the worst shooting year of his entire college basketball career. No excuse.
I will say, in the middle of this recording, not to interrupt you, Pete, St. Louis is up against LaSalle
102-83. Oh, God. Geez. Travis Ford having career nights against Philadelphia teams, I guess. So Duquesne, I hate that matchup. Last time it was close, and they didn't even have Day-Day Grant. That's going to be a tough one. We need to go at least 2-1. If we drop two, I'm very upset by this time next week. That's what I have to say. 2-1's the floor for me. It's to my baseline mood. I'm going to be pretty miserable if we lose more than that.
You mean in two weeks? Because technically Loyola Chicago's next Wednesday, and then Duquesne's, I guess, that Saturday. So we've got a little bit more than a week of basketball there.
There we go. Yeah, next 2 weeks.
Exactly. So, yeah, that's it. That a lively mailbag. I like it. I like it. I like when the people send their stuff in. We want to hear from you.
And shout out to everyone who also DM'd us about the fan experience. Didn't mention you explicitly, but you guys you're all awesome. And I think we all want the same thing, Tony, right? Like, we all sat down in the room together. Everyone who messaged us, we would all be like, yeah, we just want the games to be more fun and people to be more engaged.
And this goes back to what I said, you know, brothers fight, but when you have that outside force, it's like circle the wagons. And this is the time. That was a bad loss, but, you know, you don't make fun of St. Joe's. You know, you don't do that to our team. And I loved how everyone came out. People came out to that game, rain or shine. You know, you can say that you don't like where the program is at now. Guess what? They still showed up and they paid the money. You know, there was a little confusion. Some people are saying it's $85. Some say are 30. Someone's got to figure out how to level the prices. Just make it clearly and very evident. This is where you come for tickets. This is the cost. I know it sounds like simple. And people are like, well, of course you would know, but clearly not everyone knows. So got to get the word out there. And hey, St. Joe's, email us. We don't need to get paid. Give us a read. We will read it on the show to tell people where to buy tickets. We don't even want the money. We want no money. Give us the information. We will make sure that it is disseminated correctly.
Every single week, we'll read the same thing every week. updates about possible fan interactions and what they can get from going to the games. Like, we can do we'll read anything.
Yeah. Hawks fans, this week we have two games, you know, one of them away, but Saturday's games at home. Tickets can be found at this website and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Of course. Why wouldn't you do that? They know the kind of reach we have. They know that people like to listen to us. Come on. Keep it simple. And we just said we do it for free.
Yeah, exactly. If you're not in the area, here's the alumni events in your area. We'll read anything.
But we went to St. Joe's. They're assuming that we can read.
Well,
that's the problem.
Safe to say. Yeah, that is the problem.
I just wanted to wrap on that, where it's like, we go at each other sometimes. Fans don't agree with each other, but there's one thing I can't say, or I can say, is that everyone showed up for that game, even though it was a disappointment. They did everything they needed to. I can't ask the fans for anything more than what they gave that night.
I feel like that's very fair. So, Tony, in 2 weeks from now, February 17th, you know, that Duquesne game that you mentioned, if that game goes as it did last year, you know, things are going to be bad, but we got to stay together. What are your closing thoughts for the show? I'll let you give us the send off. What are you thinking? What's on your mind?
I think the final word is just keep as close to 500 or above in A-10 play. That's where we're at. That's where we're trending. Win two of these games. I think the easiest ones to win are what you say, Loyola Chicago and St. Louis. And we'll see it from there. We got a tough game in Richmond. We still got to play Richmond. I'm trying to think of the other teams we still have to play, right? So we've got a couple of easy ones coming up. And by easy, I mean winnable ones. That's the word I want to use. But think about it. Even after Duquesne, it's GW, which is never easy. VCU, that's going to be tough because it's at VCU. That is not going to be easy. Fordham at home. Okay, that's not terrible. I'm comfortable about that one. Richmond at Richmond. So we're going down to Virginia twice. That's hard. And then you got to play Davidson. They're kind of, you know, middle of the pack, I guess. That's where you finish off the team. It is not going to be easy, right? So we're still trending for 500. If I count up the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, and I'm looking at it, we can probably finish one game above 500 if we play really well. And that's us, you know, potentially beating a team we shouldn't or losing to a team that we should. So that's my final remark.
Get ready for March 12th. We need to be ready for Brooklyn, all right? Ladies and gentlemen, thanks for tuning in. Please keep DMing us. Please keep interacting with us. And as always, the Hawk will never die.